It's Sunday morning, time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter, brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoor Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio, and I hope that you enjoy this morning's show. I'm going to take a bit of time at the start of the show to talk about what I think the conservation, hunting, fishing, outdoor recreation landscape looks like now that we know who will be the next president of the United States. And I have some thoughts that may surprise some of you a little bit. And I also want to talk about an absolutely epic experience that I had watching the swans migrate, tens of thousands of swans migrate into the Salt Lake Basin, and listening to them overnight as they whooped it up on their ancestral staging grounds before they head for places like Mexico and the Central Valley of California. It was one of life's truly remarkable moments. But before I do that, let me start with what happened, of course, on Tuesday. We found out we elected a new president of the United States, and what I think it means for conservation and the future of hunting and fishing. First of all, the Pittman-Robertson Funds have been a major driver in the funding of state conservation areas across America. Fish and game agencies, departments of conservation, natural resource agencies derive a large percentage of their funding from Pittman-Robertson Funds. Pittman-Robertson Funds, as many of you know, come from the sale of firearms and ammunition, an excise tax that was passed back in the 30s by sportsmen to raise funds for land and water conservation, and particularly to further hunting and fishing. Over the last 8 years, these funds have increased exponentially as the sale of firearms and ammunition related to firearms moved to record levels. We saw incredible increases in the performance of companies such as Storm Ruger and Smith Wesson. Their stocks outperformed just about every other sector of the economy as Americans bought guns at record levels, whether they were fearful of for their own safety or whether they were fearful of their becoming regulations, and primarily it's the latter that drove this incredible gun sale. The stock, if you one wants to take a look at what the market thinks about the future of a Donald Trump administration, the performance of Ruger and Smith & Wesson indicates that the world thinks we're going to be buying a lot less guns because there's likely to be a lot less regulation coming on the possession and ownership of firearms in America under a Trump administration. So what that's going to mean is that the incredible amount of money that has been coming to the states, for instance, Minnesota in the early 2000s in the George Bush administration received roughly $6 million a year from Pittman-Robertson Funds. I believe the latest number that they received in the last year of the Obama administration for 2014 that we have information for is they received $22 million worth of funding. So you have, you have an increase. It's unbelievable. And that's true across all of America. And of course, the states have just thought this gravy train is going to continue. I'm here to tell you this morning, this gravy train is not going to continue. The sale of Pittman-Robertson Funds is going to plunge. The sale of firearms funds is going to plunge. And Pittman-Robertson Funds are going to return to their historic levels, and states are going to say, oh, my goodness, what happened to this gravy train? It's the way government works. It's inevitable. States don't understand when they have a windfall that they should put the money aside or that they should recognize it's not going to continue forever. They just think it's going to continue forever. And perhaps if Hillary Clinton had been elected president, the Pittman-Robertson Funds might have actually continued to increase. So from the point of view of how much money states are going to have, one of their major funding sources, the excise tax and the sale of firearms and ammunition through Pittman-Robertson funds, according to my beliefs and the beliefs of people that I talk with, are going to fall dramatically. So the state of Illinois, which already is in a terrible situation when it comes to the Department of Conservation, or the Department of Natural Resources, is going to see a serious hit there. But that hit is coming probably for the right reasons, because the regulation is going to decline across the board in America, and Pittman-Robertson funds have largely been driven through the fear of Americans of increased regulation. What I want to talk specifically about are some things that I think will happen with a Trump administration. The first thing is the Keystone Pipeline will be built. This could be a very powerful engine for conservation if it's handled correctly. And I have to laugh when I say it's the art of the deal. The Keystone Pipeline will be built if it accompanies major commitments to funding of the environment and conservation. And this can be done. The amount of money that is at stake with the building of the Keystone Pipeline leaves plenty of leverage to extract serious commitments of financial resources to protect the natural resources of the region it's going through and actually to enhance those natural resources. So what was never understood with the Keystone Pipeline was that there was lots of money available from the private sector by those building the pipeline to do good things for the environment. I think you're going to see that now. Unfortunately, the previous administration, when it really was in a position to extract enormous benefits to the environment, did not do so. The position is now less leveraged because the pipeline will be built, in my view. I think Congress will pass it. I think the president will sign it. The question is, can the conservation community and the agricultural community obtain enough concessions with the building of the pipeline now to make it a true win for conservation across the heartland of America? I think it can. It's going to have to be smart about how it does it. But we certainly can build a pipeline and obtain land and easements and develop habitat to the point of view where actually the natural resources of the region are vastly improved. That is one of the first things that I think will be on the table, and it's very important for the conservation community to work with the Trump administration to build a pipeline that not only protects the environment, but that enhances the environment. I think we're going to see also a big commitment to our national parks. I think that we are going to see an amazing amount of money spent on the infrastructure of America, which will include outdoor resources. It will include our national parks, which are woefully underfunded. But what will happen is that it needs to occur in a way that we are not bankrupting the country, that we basically can create a movement to use volunteerism in America. And I know you. This may sound a little like a broken record to you, but it's something Governor Rauner in Illinois is working hard on, which has certainly been supported by the private sector, is the use of volunteers to help rebuild our state parks in Illinois, to rebuild our bike paths, to empower the private sector. There are innumerable government regulations that right now stand in the way of the private sector offering its help, whether it be the Nature Conservancy, Friends of the Park, Ducks Unlimited, Delta Waterfowl, Ruffed Grouse Society. You could go across the entire spectrum of the conservation community. They will step up if given the opportunity to help rebuild our national parks and rebuild our national wildlife refuges and rebuild the infrastructure and management capacities of our outdoor recreation resources in America. One of the things that has to happen, again, is that the volunteers of America, the private sector volunteerism from the scouts through the conservation organizations, through things like in Chicago Open Lands, they have to be empowered, they have to be enabled to go and do work that protects our enhances our natural resources. That means a rollback of regulations that place limits on what volunteers can do. We're going to have to unshackle that. And I think part of what's going to happen is Congress is going to look at ways to roll back regulations so that great organizations that do great work, whether it be Ducks Unlimited or Delta Waterfowl, as I said, or Ruffed Grouse Society or the Wild Salmon Center, all these organizations have the ability to put volunteers, and there are millions of us. There are almost 50 million American adults who hunt and fish, a portion of which, even if it's 1%, is a lot of people going out on the land to help fix things and to help manage things. The last thing I want to talk about before we take a break is what's going to happen with our national wildlife refuges. We have been on a death spiral with our national wildlife refuges when it comes to the management of these refuges. What's occurred is that we have moved away from managing food resources for the wildlife on the refuges to just a status quo, let nature take over. That does not work. Part of the reason the national wildlife refuges were created was to provide not only the habitat and the sanctuary, but the food that migratory birds were needed. This is true more now than almost at any time, as agricultural practices provide so little food on the landscape over the course of the winter. Our national wildlife refuges throughout the south, southern part of the United States have been largely abandoned when it comes to managing food resources for waterfowl and migratory birds. It is essential that those resources, which can be making money for the U.S. government through crop share programs, be put back into place. And, of course, what happened was over the last 8 years, this move away from any kind of pesticides, and I certainly understand that, as do I think all of you. We don't want to add to our pesticide or nitrogen loads in our rivers. The Department of Interior, just with a broad brush, basically said, we are no longer going to provide artificial food resources in our national wildlife refuges. We want it to be a natural system. Well, unfortunately, that natural system ended over 200 years ago in many places, and certainly in the last 100 years across most of America. If we don't provide the food resources, we are going to greatly impact migratory birds and other animals that depend on our national wildlife refuges. One of the first things the Department of Interior needs to do is to move back to a production system on our national wildlife refuges. So I think what we're going to find here in the near future is the potential for the private sector working with a willing Congress and a president to greatly energize volunteerism in America and to manage our national wildlife refuges and our natural areas that have been preserved for the habitat of wildlife, to be for them to be managed in a proper way. And we've got to unshackle the regulations that are just absolutely stripping us of the ability for volunteers, and also that are making it very difficult to manage natural areas or to acquire natural areas. So it's an opportunity. We'll see what happens. I hope we don't squander it. There's a lot that we can do, and I am firmly a believer in the ability of the private sector through volunteerism to help move the dial significantly for the future of natural resource management in America. I'm going to take a break. When I come back, I'm going to talk very quickly about the Climate Change Accord, and then I'm going to talk about this wonderful moment with swans. Thanks for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and first a message from your Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Winter is here, and it's always tough on the road. But when the going gets tough, the tough get going. And nothing is tougher than the 2016 Chevy Silverado. Silverado is the longest-lasting, most dependable pickup on the road. With all-steel construction, Silverado is built to tame Chicago's winter weather. And Silverado's towing package offers 11,400 pounds of towing capacity. Perfect for hauling your snowmobiles. I love pulling my neighbors out of their snowdrifts. And right now, you can get $7,250 total savings on a 2016 Chevy Silverado All-Star. $7,250. That really warms my heart. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and get all the details. Or head to your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer today and pick up a pickup that works as hard as you do, on the road or off. Chevy Silverado is one tough customer.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio, and I certainly hope that you are enjoying this morning's program. Before I turn to the magic of swans, I want to spend just a moment talking about what I think is going to happen with the climate accord that was signed last year in Europe, and give you a sense of my views as to how this is going to move forward. President-elect Trump vowed repeatedly that he would back the United States out of a global deal addressing climate change, and that he would cut off aid to the $100 billion climate fund that is designed to help poorer nations. That's a quote from the Wall Street Journal. He cannot cancel the deal unilaterally, but he could begin the process of withdrawing the U.S. I want to think about that, all of us think about that for a moment. We have agreed to spend $100 billion to help nations of the world that might be impacted by climate change, because it's believed that we are the largest producer of emissions causing climate change. At least historically, that's the case. Certainly with the advance of China and what's happening in the developing world, we may no longer be the largest contributor of potential climate-causing, altering emissions. But $100 billion is not pocket change under any circumstances. And I think what is going to happen is that President-elect Trump is going to simply say, we are not paying for this. We are going to fix what needs to be done in America to help clean up the environment. He is all for, and I'm not an advocate here, he's just all for increasing, for instance, scrubbers in coal plants and in helping to enable us to have cleaner energy. And I think the shift is going to be fix it in America first, and then we can help the rest of the world. And I'm not saying that's right or that's wrong, but I think what we're going to see in the environment is if we're going to spend money on cleaning up the environment, it's going to be spent in America first. And I don't think there's any chance that $100 billion is going to be put, the United States taxpayers is going to be put into a global climate fund to help nations around the world. That money, if it exists, is going to be spent in America first on the kinds of things I talked about a few minutes ago. So now I want to shift to, and I think, by the way, that's not a political statement, it's just a factual statement of what's going to happen. You can agree or disagree with me whether that's right or wrong, but I think that's what's going to happen. Funds that have been sent around the world are going to be, for conservation, are going to be now spent in America. What I want to shift to now, with just the time I have left, is one of the great stories, for me, of the year. I found myself recently in the marshes north of Salt Lake City, in a place called the Bear River National Wildlife Refuge, when the swans arrived, the trumpeter swans, fresh from the Arctic. It's one of the great, great migrations in the world, and they spend about 3 weeks in the Intermountain region north of Salt Lake on what is a pristine marsh environment. And there are 40 to 50,000 tundra swans that gather in this region starting in late October and running to almost Thanksgiving. And it's an historic migration that's been going on since the beginning of time, or at least since the beginning of tundra swans. And to be there when they arrive is something that anyone who loves to bird should go see. Anyone who loves to bird watch should go see. And they came late in the afternoon, and you could see them coming over the mountaintops from the north. Just waves and waves of white. It looked like falling snow as they moved against the mountains and began to circle the marsh and then land. This we're talking about nearly 100,000 acres of marshland, and began to circle and then land. And as it got dark, the roar of the swans ever increased. And through the night, we sat outside with the fire before us, and we listened to just this increasing roar as during the course of the night on the what has been now a rising full moon, we're moving towards the full moon, the swans arrived. And the next morning, when it broke crystal clear, and yes, surprisingly warm, the west has been very warm as well, the marsh, this whole region was just white, covered with the arrival of swans, which will be there for the next 3 weeks. But to be there on the afternoon and the evening, to sit outside listening to them pass overhead, to where finally there's just a roaring cacophony of swan symphony, as I call it. It's a place you ought to put on your radar screen if you love to watch birds. Go to the Great Salt Lake Basin at the time when the tundra swans are there. It's an experience you'll never forget. I happened to be there just that one moment. It was great. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next Sunday morning with much more on the great outdoors, and hopefully you've enjoyed the show. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.